It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Drag and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Zadora on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 425. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, lots to get to on this episode of the podcast. The Phillies need a new defense against the dark arts teacher. We'll get into their search for yet another new pitching coach. I wrote a piece for The Good Fight this week about expectations for Spencer Howard. I wanted to talk about him a little bit on the podcast, and we'll get a World Series preview coming up here. We know who it's going to be, the Rays and the Dodgers. Thankfully, the nightmare of a Braves versus Astros World Series did not come to pass. But this is Dodgers versus Rays World Series also has some interesting implications for baseball. So we're going to get into all that, plus a lot more coming up here over the next few minutes with my good friend Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports, who you can, of course, follow on Twitter. You probably already do. She is at Liz Rocher. Liz, how you feeling?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited for the World Series. I'm glad the Astros aren't in it. I'm glad the Braves got Dodgers.
That's right, they did.
They got 180 on that.
Yeah, they sure did. They blew a 3-1 lead. What is it about Atlanta and blowing leads after getting, you know, three quarters of the way through something? It just doesn't. It's just terrible.
It's
heartbreaking, isn't it? Yeah,
it's fabulous. I mean, the only thing that could have made it better is if the winning pitcher's last name was Sherman. Really,
right.
The only thing that could have made it more poetic.
That's right.
You know, because, you know, I'm looking at this article on Defector right now. The phoenix of Deadspin has arisen in the form of Defector.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Lay wrote an article today called "Imagine Trading This Guy and It's Mookie Betts."
Yes, I saw that.
And it's fantastic because he had some bat issues, but he was incredible with defense. And I'm reading it and thinking, you know, if you adjust this just a little bit, mm-hmm. if you change the context. This could be about the Phillies and Real Muto, because imagine letting this guy go.
Yeah.
This is a talent that is, you know, in catcher terms, I would say equal to Mookie Betts, you know, on the scale of, you know, the ceiling of catchers.
Yeah, there's very few catchers in baseball that does what JT Realmuto can do, that can play that kind of defense, that can provide you with well above average offense, and is a team leader, a guy everybody loves. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, again, we've talked a lot about JT Realmuto, how much he's going to command, how much we think he could get on the open market, but it is interesting to think about what you do without JT Realmuto. What's the alternative? And we've talked about it. It's Andrew Knapp, it's Rafael Marchand, and it's somebody off the free agent wire like a James McCann or Wilson Ramos coming in here, you know?
I mean, what it really is making sure you have a backup plan for every game next year. Whatever it is you're doing, make sure there's something else on television you want to watch. Make sure there is a show that you're binging or a book you want to read or a child you have to tend to. Just make sure that there's something happening, because you will probably want to stop watching the game.
Yeah.
Sure that you have an exit plan.
Right. I did. And that Mookie Betts piece is really good. And you can swap out JT Realmuto for that, because Mookie Betts is younger. But the comparison between the two, as far as the importance that they have, and especially with Realmuto and the position that he plays, it definitely is apropos to the Philly situation with him right now. And it sure looks like the Phillies are going to let him go unless Realmuto doesn't find the kind of deal out there. You know, I was going to save this for a little bit later in the show. But since you kind of brought it up, let's kind of jump into Realmuto a little bit. I wanted to get a sense, and by the way, we're expecting Justin to join us at some point here on the podcast, Justin Clue, so he might hop on here in the next few minutes. If he does, don't be scared. It's just Justin. But he'll hopefully be joining us here in a few minutes. a lot of stuff came out last week about the Yankees possibly looking to move on from Gary Sanchez at catcher. And that's horrible news if you're a Phillies fan. You know,
oh, yeah. It's real bad.
It's real, real, real bad. And the other New York team is a team that year after year has been the laughingstock of the National League with an owner with a chip on his shoulder and more money than anyone else in baseball. And they want JT Realmuto. And then that doesn't even account for many of the other teams that want JT Realmuto. The Phillies, I think, are willing to re-sign him if they can get him on somewhat of a deal. That ain't happening. I just don't see it happening, Liz. And I guess my thought is, who do you see him ending up with? Who do you see JT Realmuto? Whose uniform is he wearing in 2021?
I think the teams that are likely to offer him the most money, I think, are probably the Mets and the Yankees.
Right.
I can't imagine. Those are my two teams.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think he ends up there. And we're either sad because he's on the Yankees or really, really sad because he's on the Mets and we have to watch that. I mean, imagine being a Mets employee or even being Steve Cohen right now, the owner, and watching Travis d'Arnaud, a player that you had for years. Even if you weren't the owner of the team then, your team had him, and watching him, you know, have a great season for the Braves and flourish the way that you hoped he would for years.
Yeah.
And then you just let him go and he lands with the Braves and turns into the player that they always hoped he would be. That's got to kill them. And maybe there's a little bit of that there because I feel like they would love to avenge their mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, no, I agree totally. And I think, I think the Yankees make the most sense for Realmuto. Like, if you're JT Realmuto, are you going to go to New York to play for the Mets? Or are you going to go to play for the Yankees, a team that is on the precipice of a World Series pretty much every year? They got to get pitching, and there's some holes the Yankees got to figure out. They're an injury-prone team. Their two main guys, Judge and Stanton, are injured a lot, but you bring Realmuto aboard, and they have a lot of depth on that team. I mean, if I'm JT Realmuto and it's close money-wise, I'm going with the Yankees. Now, that being said, I think JT has made it pretty clear his priority is to blow up the market for catchers. My guess is he's kind of setting things up as a benchmark. Right, he wants his next salary to be a benchmark for all the catchers behind him, and so I think he's going to take the best deal. I mean, unless it's like $5 million or $10 million total in this contract, he's going to go wherever the most money is, and I think it's going to be the Yankees or Mets that offer that kind of money. But I don't think where a team is in the standings or whether they're a losing team or a winning team, I don't think that's going to matter a whole lot to him. I think it's going to be all about the money.
Yeah, I agree. And I can't fault him for that.
No, you know, it's not a negative because he's trying to do it for the guys behind him. I mean, obviously, every player wants to make as much as they can make. But one of the reasons he's doing this is so that the other catchers behind him, you raise the tide a little bit to help lift the other boats behind you.
You care. When you care about the legacy of your position and knowing the catchers who've come before you that may not have gotten what they were worth, you wanna make it better. Or at least when the last catcher get a mega deal was Joe Mauer. Yeah. I think maybe you'd like to maybe cleanse everyone's palate just a little bit. No disrespect to Joe Mauer at all. But
No. Yeah. No, of course not. Joe Mauer, very nice guy. And he signed that deal with his part of that, I think, too, was the fact that it was his hometown team. There was a lot of emotional connection there between the Twins and Mauer and the fact that he grew up in that area and all that stuff.
But,
That's not going to be the case with JT here.
Oh, no.
Because he grew up in Oklahoma. So, I mean, unless he's going to go play for the Rangers or something.
The famous Oklahoma Dust Bowls. I don't know.
That's right. That's right.
Oklahoma Tumbleweed.
Oh my gosh.
Am I close? Are those Oklahoma things?
I think they have tumbleweeds in Oklahoma. Yeah.
Sure.
Tornadoes. It's Tornado Alley. So I don't know that you're necessarily naming your baseball team after a massive storm front. But anyway, that's not true. You have the Carolina Hurricanes. So I guess you could be the Oklahoma Tornadoes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
Why not?
I know things about Oklahoma, John.
Sure, I know lots of different things about Oklahoma. It's the best state there is. All right, let's get on, and let's talk a little bit about the fact that the Phillies, surprisingly, are going to begin to have to find a new pitching coach once again. For the fifth time in 5 years next year, the Phillies will have a new pitching coach. It was a surprise announcement on Sunday that Brian Price announced he's leaving the team for personal reasons. He's retiring after just one season with the team. He had signed a 3-year deal with the Phillies last offseason. I don't know how much, what I thought of his performance this year. I think we saw some good things. We saw Zach Wheeler pitch differently and pitch better this year. He was more effective, tons of ground balls, lower ERA, pitch deeper into games. Those are all good things, lower strikeouts. Zach Eflin, I thought, was up and down, very uneven, but at the end of the year showed some good things. But that's kind of what we've seen from Zach Eflin over the last couple years. So jury's out. Spencer Howard, we didn't see much from Spencer Howard, and I want to talk about him more in a few minutes. Really not a good season for him in his first taste of big league baseball, and of course had another shoulder injury. And then the bullpen issues that were going on. So Brian Price went and talked about it and said basically that this was not a performance thing, that this was not something that had anything to do with the fact that the Phillies did have the worst bullpen in baseball, but that really this is, I think, being brought about by COVID. He talked about COVID being extremely challenging, and he said, it accelerated things for me. It was a reminder of what it's like to be away from my family, the inability for them to access him because of the limitations of the world that they were living in, and the unknown future of COVID was one of the big reasons why he decided to go. So, I can understand the position that Brian Price was in. And Justin Clue has joined us here on the podcast. And we're talking about Brian Price. Hi, Justin.
Hello.
We're talking about Brian Price.
Yeah, I was picking up the context clues.
Yeah, okay.
I
figured.
Smart. We know.
Smart guy. Yeah, well-read and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, this is, I can't fault him for it. It would have been nice to not have to find another pitching coach for the fifth time in 5 years. But he just basically said, I miss my family. I've been taking them through this since 1991. They've been great and supportive. It just doesn't resonate with me anymore to spend this much time away from home. And I think more and more of us have been recognizing the importance of family, given a global pandemic. That's just natural that that's going to happen. And given the fact that you're with so many other athletes day in and day out in a clubhouse and all that, it stinks, but it kind of makes sense, Liz. And so I was, what are your thoughts on Brian Price leaving the Phillies after just one season?
I mean, I admire him for making the choice because it couldn't have been easy. Yeah. I mean, maybe it was super easy and he's like, nope, I don't want to, but you know, I'm sure it wasn't an easy decision for him, but it also couldn't have been an easy season. He talked about spending his anniversary, his 28th wedding anniversary, away from his wife, sitting alone in his Philadelphia apartment.
Yeah.
You know, and because his wife couldn't join him in Philadelphia this summer. So, you know, I don't blame him. I'm sad that he's leaving. The pitchers seemed to like him. There was some improvement. But he also took responsibility for the bullpen. He's like, the bullpen had issues. That's on me. But that, you know, it given a longer season, he knows that they would have found their stride, or at least had periods where they weren't really bad, which is also correct. So I appreciate him being really honest on the way out, because what does he have to lose? He's retiring.
Right. Justin, what do you think about Brian Price leaving after a year?
Well, you know, it's kind of incredible how you can look at the Phillies and just be overwhelmed with this desire to walk away from baseball forever. So I think we can all fully understand what Brian Price was going through. And it was also a reminder that there's a lot of, like, every one of these guys is going through the same kind of challenges that Brian Price and his being away from his family was for him. This is a struggle for a lot of them, you know, and you don't see this too often. And that doesn't mean people, you know, anyone is any worse than Brian Price just because they're, you know, not making this decision somewhat jarringly. It just means that they're still sacrificing. You know, this is their, you know, on the one hand, yeah, they're in professional sports and they're making tons of money and they're totally taken care of. They're fine. But also, you know, being away from your family is very hard, no matter what your job is. So this is a reminder that this is a problem for a lot of guys in baseball. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I know we talked a lot going into this season about how the new manager and the new coaching staff were going to be some of the biggest gains for the Phillies potentially this season, that we could see a culture shift, we could see some consistency in the directives, and just see an overall kind of plan and maybe even a philosophy kind of develop, which is something this team sorely needs. And so to see that it was kind of wrong to assume that we were building, you know, a long-term coaching staff kind of,
yeah,
That does. That kind of sucks. You know, I don't blame Brian Price for that at all. I'm just saying that in general, I know we're all very familiar with the turnover rate in this particular job. And even, you know, having a new manager after only two seasons with a new manager is, I think this team really needs to find some stability in this department, stability and leadership. We're all aware of what's happening in the front office right now, that is to say, we are aware that we are unaware of what's happening in the front office right now.
Yeah.
But just to see a coach as revered as Brian Price is come to Philly was like, yeah, that felt like it was a get, even though we, not being, you know, in the clubhouse or anything, weren't going to see the direct results of that get for most of its, you know, most of the time he was here. But, you know, now he's gone. It feels like, well, that thing we were citing as a potential big strength of the Phillies moving forward, especially with the bitter taste of Rick Kranitz going to the Braves still, you know, in our mouths. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of like, man, I hope this team reaches a point where they're able to get talent like Brian Price's and manage to hang on to it. Yeah, because this team is in need of stability in that department.
Yeah, I mean, they had Bob McClure in 2017, Kranitz in 2018. They dumped Kranitz because they really liked the analytically driven Chris Young, and he was such a disaster that they moved on from him after just one season and signed Brian Price to be the pitching coach last year. Now they're going to have a fifth pitching coach here in five straight seasons, and that's not good for continuity. And it's, you know, we talk about the fact the Phillies have not been able to develop any pitching here over these last few years. The fact that you've had now four different pitching coaches in four straight years. It's going to be five in five different years. You're talking about different programs. You're talking about different teaching styles, teaching methods, all these. That's got to factor into it some, the fact that they haven't had any stability. And you're right, Justin. We were talking about Joe Girardi and Brian Price and you know, John Mailey and all these different guys talking. Joe Dillon. John Mailey was the guy they got rid of. Joe Dillon, the new guy who actually helped them hit this year. We were guys that, you know, we felt like this coaching staff and the manager would really matter. You know, we thought moving from the Gabe Kapler regime to Joe Girardi regime would really matter. At the end of the day, wins and losses, you know, they finished a little bit worse this year in a shortened season and missed the playoffs and with expanded postseason and three extra teams in each league. So it's fair to wonder, you know, how much it all actually helped. But I will say that having this many different pitching coaches can't be good for development. It can't be good for guys like Zach Eflin and Spencer Howard, who get used to doing something one way and then it gets changed. I think we all agree they had to move on from Chris Young. The stories that came out at the end of last year about how much of a mess it was with the handling of pitchers in 2019, Chris Young had to go. And it really does make moving on from Kranitz look all that much worse. Like, all that may be one of the worst decisions Matt Klentak made while he was the general manager here.
And I think we'll probably forget it pretty easily. I mean, already it's been kind of buried just because time has passed and other things, you know, big things have happened for the Phillies since then. Mm-hmm. But I think you could probably, when this is, you know, quote unquote, all over, you could go back and find that was probably traceable as like one of the roots of a Phillies longer term issue. I wouldn't be surprised, I guess, is at least fair to say.
I think the next pitching coach will be very important for, you know, trying to rebuild the trust that needs to be there for the, you know, the pitching to have some continuity to feel comfortable. I also think it will be important in determining whether or not pitching coach is the Spinal Tap drummer of the Phillies.
I haven't seen Spinal Tap in
forever.
You've
not seen Spinal Tap? Come on.
It's been a while. I'm trying to remember with the Spinal Tap drummer reference.
Well, I'm not going to explain it now.
I have disappointed Liz in some profound way.
Yes, you have.
And I'm sure many of you listening, I've disappointed in a profound way with that, with not getting that reference. Well, anyway, I'll move on because I'll look it up. I'm going to go have to watch Spinal Tap now. I'm going to have to watch it this week. Jim Salisbury mentioned some in-house candidates to replace Brian Price. Dave Lundquist, who's been the assistant pitching coach for two seasons and before that worked for 11 seasons in the team's minor league system. Rafael Chavez is the organization's minor league pitching coordinator and Seattle's former big league pitching coach. Scott Lauber mentioned Mike Harkey, the Yankees bullpen coach, who has a long history with Joe Girardi. And Matt Breen mentioned Rich Doobie as a potential guy to come back along with internal so I know
who
some other internal
that?
Candidates. Rich Matt Breen, Phillies beat writer Matt Breen from the Inquirer, and also Jim Gott, who is an internal candidate. Rich Doobie's not coming back.
The beat
right?
writers are trolling us because remember when Jim Salisbury mentioned Ruben Amaro Jr. as a potential
yes,
new
I do.
GM candidate? They're trolling us. Do not let them fool you. They're not serious, no matter what they say.
So, I mean, Charlie Manuel came back. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was Charlie Manuel, World Series winning, eternally beloved manager.
It was also Rich probably like. He was also probably like sleeping in a folding chair in Andy McPhail's office or something.
Let's bring back Joe Kerrigan. I want to bring back that soup. I'm trying to think who are the worst pitching coaches in Phillies history? There have been
Chris Young.
Chris Young's at the top.
The end. Do we even need to suggest anybody else?
Do you remember, John? Do you remember a lot of pitching coaches offhand? Because I bet you do. I bet you do.
I do know.
I've got Johnny Padres in the bank. Yep. That's about it.
That's
Claude Osteen was the Phillies pitching coach for a number of years, back in the late 80s, I think it was, early 90s. Who else was? Oh, man. Now I am blanking on some of them right now.
You know one, and that's more than I know beyond the four guys we've been talking about.
Yeah, Claude Osteen is the one guy I'm remembering now. But you're right, Johnny Padres was the guy from 93.
So we each
right?
remember one.
We remember one. Yeah.
Well, I guess with Liz, we're averaging below one per person.
Yes.
Okay.
You never forget your first Phillies pitching coach, and I think that's where we are on it. All right, well, it's an interesting situation the Phillies find themselves in this offseason, having to find a new general manager, possibly a new president of baseball operations, and now, surprisingly, a new pitching coach. My guess is it'll have some connection to Joe Girardi somehow, as seems like most hires are probably going to have a connection to Joe Girardi somehow over the next few weeks and months. We're going to step away. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into some World Series stuff, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about Spencer Howard. I wrote a piece in The Good Fight about him this week, and want to talk just a little bit about his 2020 season and how we all feel about him moving forward. So we'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So before we get to our World Series preview, I wrote a piece for The Good Fight about Spencer Howard this week, because as we think about the Phillies offseason, there's lots of unanswered questions. There are a lot of things that have to be figured out over these next few weeks. They got to figure out JT Realmuto. They got to figure out what we don't know what the payroll is going to look like for next year. Is it going to be the same? Is it going to go down? Do they re-sign Didi Gregorius? If not, do they get a free agent to replace him? Do they do it? Do they just fill the spot internally with Gene Segura? What kind of big league starter do they get to replace Jake Arrieta? How do they fix one of the worst bullpens in baseball history? And probably more importantly than anything else, the front office. Who's going to be the general manager? Who's going to be the next president of baseball operations? Those are all really, really big questions. To me, what the Phillies have in Spencer Howard is as big as any of those questions, and it's just not getting talked about a whole lot. Here's a guy who's a top 35 prospect in all of baseball by just about everybody. Baseball America, MLB Pipeline, Baseball Prospectus, they all have this guy somewhere between 27 and 36. He's, everybody was raving about him coming into the season because he supposedly throws in the mid to upper 90s, can reach triple digits on occasion, that he's got a trio of off-speed pitches that are above average, if not a little bit better than that. And then he came up this year when he finally got, and he looked dominant when they were doing the in summer camp when he was. I mean, Bryce Harper talking about if this guy's not the day six starter, there's something wrong with this with this picture. He came up eventually. It wasn't on day six. A couple weeks into the season, he came up and didn't look like a guy who was an elite prospect. He failed to pitch five innings in five of his six starts. Had a 5.92 ERA, 5.86 FIP. In 24 and a third innings of work, was basically a replacement level player, a zero wins above replacement player. And then he ended up the season on the injured list. He made it, they took him off the injured list for the last three games of the season against Tampa to have him available out of the bullpen, and he never pitched out of the bullpen. He had velocity drops in his starts as the innings went along. He's got shoulder injuries last year and this year. I'm certainly not burying the 24-year-old kid after six starts in the major leagues, even though it might sound like it. But I am concerned about Spencer Howard, this guy who we really, really need to be a top of the rotation starter. We need to find somebody in this organization to fill that role. Justin, as you watched Spencer Howard this year and thinking about all those different things, where are you at on him as a prospect for this team?
Well, I think seeing him this year was inevitable, whether COVID impacted the season or not. He's somebody who kind of went into the draft with some momentum because his velocity went up as he was in college. Like the older he got, and finally was hitting the high 90s by the time the Phillies, I think, were sniffing around. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely somebody I think we were all very excited to see, in part because Sixto Sanchez had already had a bunch of success, and it was just like, well, we better have somebody. I want to see if Spencer can like replace Sixto in, you know, our hearts or our anxiety about the future of this team's pitching. So, yeah, but I think I left the season with about the same kind of worries you're talking about, John. That there's always an adjustment period, and this has been a strange season developmentally. Mm-hmm. Guys have had to adapt to just stay on top of their workouts, especially if they are still rehabbing from past injuries. I think it was Victor Arano got stuck in Mexico during COVID,
right.
and he wound up with like out the training resources he needed. I feel like did a little better than that. But at the same time, yeah, I left this season feeling like he was not as dominant as I think we were hoping to see, the way a guy can be the first time through the league. So at the same time, I kind of glossing over a lot of my concerns like this. Somebody like Spencer Howard is going to be part of the future for the Phillies. I mean, look how long they just gave the last crop of pitchers to figure it out. So I think his ceiling is higher. I think his raw stuff has proven that, you know, he's here for a reason, and that he's impressed at enough levels thus far that having a shaky first six starts in the major leagues isn't the craziest thing in the world to happen to a prospect. And anything that happens this year in baseball is made 10 times crazier by all the adjustments everyone has had to make along the way. So if he didn't look comfortable this year, I think this was the hardest year in baseball to feel comfortable as a young pitcher, especially if you're pitching for the first time at the professional level. So I'm not losing too much sleep over this, but I did leave the season with about the same impression you did.
Liz, your thoughts on Spencer Howard's 2020 and the future for him?
I mean, I'm not gonna even start writing the book about Spencer Howard until we get a continuous spring training, after which he can start the season on time. And so, you know, I think that's something that I don't want to minimize. I think that was tough for a lot of players, especially pitchers. You know, at the beginning of the season, there was a rash of pitcher injuries that, you know, people were saying that it was because there just wasn't enough time to prepare and getting ready for the season and then stopping and then getting ready again. So, you know, I have concerns. You know, he didn't look great this year, but this was as Justin said, this is a weird first year, and it's tough for even, it was tough for even the most seasoned players.
Mm-hmm. So, I honestly want to just make sure that the Phillies, you know, they've had enough young pitchers come up with enough raw stuff to hang around, but never quite figuring it out. We all know exactly who I'm talking about. The point being that there's been some pretty open cases of guys struggling mentally when they're on the mound. And I don't know. I mean, talking about another young pitcher who we know is talented, but didn't look great for a stretch. It kind of just makes you wonder, like, what is this team made a point to go out and hire multiple, I believe, mental health skills coaches? And, you know, that they don't have a great track record in this regard. Like, Vince Velasquez was very, you know, he was very open, you know, about punishing himself to the press. And we saw, you know, Nick Pivetta look like he was really coming down on himself a couple of times just on the TV broadcast while he was still on the mound a couple of times. So, you know, this is you want to make sure the Phillies are able to help young pitchers adjust to the major leagues, because mentally that's going to be a huge adjustment. And I hope after he struggled like this that it's clear that, you know, he still has a place here. And I think I would assume the team still envisions him being a part of their rotation moving forward. So, yeah, I don't know. That's just something that came to mind.
As much as anything else to me, there's a couple things here. It's the shoulder injuries. Last year's was certainly, it was more of a shoulder strain, that caused him to miss 2 months. And then he came back and pitched well after that and pitched well in the Arizona Fall League. So there was reason to think that he would move past it. But then he starts having arm trouble again this year. And again, that could be for all the reasons that you guys said. The fact that he didn't have a continuous spring training, the fact that there were a lot of other pitchers that had some issues, and the fact that they felt good enough about his shoulder to try and bring him back for the last 3 games of the season to at least let him pitch out of the bullpen makes me feel that the shoulder stiffness that he felt at the end of the 2020 season isn't as serious. But there's 2 shoulder issues, 2 straight years. Now, Aaron Nola's a guy who had some elbow arm issues back in 2017, and we were all worried about him, and he's turned out to be just fine. So again, it's possible for a young pitcher to kind of have these issues and for it not to be a big deal. I was just watching him when he came up, and the velocity's down and the breaking stuff isn't there, and he has no command and he can't pitch deep into games. And it looked like there were a couple times maybe they pulled him early, maybe they were babying him just a little bit. But I think it's concerning that this guy has never pitched more than 112 innings in a single season. So you're talking about a guy who last year we were expecting this season he'd be able to start building up some of those innings. You know, he would be able to bridge that gap from, I think it was, he pitched about 85 innings in 2019 in the minors, and then tacked on another 20 some odd innings in the Arizona Fall League. So you're thinking, okay, maybe you get him up to 130, 140 innings here in 2020, and then you can give him a normal workload in 2021. Well, this year, pitched 24 and a third innings. And we don't know how much he pitched, by the way, when he was with Lehigh Valley, because they weren't playing games. So one would imagine he was pitching there and building up his arm strength and working every fifth day there. So it's more than 24 and a third innings, obviously. But you're not going to be able to jump him up to 150 innings next year. So you can have him slated to start the season in your starting rotation, but what that says to me is you need to not just get one starting pitcher this year to replace Arrieta. You're probably going to need a second guy to mix and match with Spencer Howard throughout the course of next season, if we get a full season, if we get a full 162 games. And that's something to think about as well, is you know, are you going to be able to... I mean, I guess I'll throw this out to you guys. How important is Spencer Howard to the 2021 Phillies starting rotation? Do you see him as a vital cog, or is he kind of a number 5 starter that you're hoping gives you something good?
I think that a Spencer Howard who makes, you know, 10, 12, a significant number of starts for this team and still leaves with a 6 ERA isn't super important to this team, but I'd say a successful Spencer Howard is exactly who this team needs. They need a young pitcher. They need a success story from the farm system. They need a win there, I think, in the worst way. And frankly, they just need starting pitchers. They need starting pitchers who are effective and can be on the team for a couple of years at least, because they're kind of running out of those in a significant way. You talk about searching for 2 more starting pitchers for this rotation. I mean, nobody's really having the conversation yet of like what that looks like of this free agent market, what picking 2 pitchers when you're trying to save money and cut costs is going to look like. But I have a feeling it's got Jason Vargas, Drew Smyly territory written all over it. So Spencer Howard actually coming back and becoming a significant member of this rotation would be huge for this team. Just huge. I think it would be sending the right kind of message that this team can develop talent. We can hit that narrative a little bit, and then we can also just have a good young pitcher in the rotation behind Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler. And I mean, that's gonna solve a lot of problems. I was gonna say anytime you can keep the bullpen off the field is a good time, but now the bullpen will be better next year. We don't have to worry about that either.
Right. So Liz, what are you thinking about Spencer Howard? How important is he to the rotation next season?
I think he's as important as they want to make him, because they can sign another pitcher to make up for him, you know, to make up for, you know, the innings deficit, or, you know, to account for him being on the injured list or whatever it is. They could sign another pitcher and take the load off of him, or they could put all of their hopes on him and make his success extremely important. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just depends on how honest they want to be with themselves. You know?
or how much they want to spend.
Exactly. Well, I mean, here's the thing. If they cannot spend money, but then Spencer Howard's success is now vital to their chances of making the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, of being competitive. So, I mean, they're going to be honest with themselves and decide that they can't afford it, in which case they're stupid. But you know, I don't run a baseball team. I'm here.
The fact that he is this important to the team already, not that he shouldn't be important to the team, but just, you know what I mean, that he's as vital, as Liz said, is also an indictment of this kind of, first, this as what this team's development has been like, but also just the uniquely hideous kind of position that they're in, this distinctly frustrating situation where it's like, there's talent here, it's not really rebuilding, but we're making all these, you know, we're picking apart this chain of command we had installed, we don't really know what our philosophy is, and now you got to tell this 23-year-old who struggled in his first six starts in the major leagues that, oh, by the way, if you fail, the whole thing collapses on your head.
Right,
so just,
right,
just a
right.
heads up. Everyone, don't forget, we're all counting on you. All right, have a good game.
Yeah, Leslie Nielsen popping into the cockpit.
Right.
I'm seeing, making an Airplane reference. I saw Airplane. I haven't seen Spinal Tap. But
excellent
Airplane,
movie.
Yeah. I'm trying to redeem myself a little bit in your
I got you, John. Don't worry.
So I guess the point is the Phillies should not be going into 2021 thinking Spencer Howard's going to be a top of the rotation starter for the whole season. If they want to be, if they want to look at the situation realistically, they need to basically look at 2020 as kind of a lost season for him.
Yeah.
All right. I'm glad we're all together on that.
Yeah. I think they'll look at this as hopefully they look at this as a lost season for you know,
everybody.
For a lot of the organization. Let's just call it that.
Pretend none of it ever happened. Flip the mattress and move on.
Do we even have to have it in Baseball Reference? Can we just like do like one of those strike through font things on Baseball Reference?
God, I mean, I wish.
They could just make it one of those options like where you click to see the minor league stats. Like, do you want to see the pandemic stats? No.
Yeah, that's right. No, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. Well, listen, speaking of the pandemic stats, when we come back, we're going to talk about this pandemic World Series. We got through the regular season. We got through the first three rounds of MLB playoffs in the bubble, and now the Fall Classic is here. So we'll talk about the Dodgers versus the Rays coming up after this quick break. We'll be right back here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So in the final segment here, we're going to talk about the World Series between the Dodgers and the Rays, the Fall Classic, getting underway here on Tuesday night. And I think it's a relief that we're not watching the Astros and the Braves. That would have been a Fall Classic none of us Phillies fans would have been able to stomach in any way. But it is an interesting matchup here in terms of the players. Obviously, it's going to be an interesting matchup. These were the two best teams in baseball during the course of the season, the best team in the American League and the best team in the National League. The Dodgers overcoming that 3-1 series deficit. The Rays almost blowing a 3-0 series lead to the Astros. It just kind of makes it all the more fun, the fact that the Astros fought so hard to get back to a Game 7 only to lose that Game 7. Something fun about that.
Yay!
I know. That's something all of America, I think, is rejoicing. I saw some people online talking about, man, it would be great if we had Astros-Dodgers again. The Dodgers could get their revenge.
Lies.
No.
Because the Astros are going to win that World Series, and
good.
It's going to be insufferable.
Yeah.
And it would be, you know, that's not how that's not how life works, people. But here's some interesting nuggets. The Dodgers are the eighth team to win a league championship series after trailing 3-1 in the series. The last four teams to do it all won the World Series. Also, the Atlanta Braves have now gone 12 straight playoff appearances without reaching the World Series. That matches the Oakland A's for the longest streak of all time. 12 straight playoff appearances without a World Series for Atlanta. They were one win away.
That's
yikes.
Awesome.
I love
How
it.
Delightful.
Do you guys think that's worse, that makes it harder to be a Braves fan than, I don't know, other franchises?
I'm sure it is, but, you know, I feel like there aren't a ton of people voluntarily choosing their fandom. I think many of us tend to bear it like the burden it is.
I think if you're asking me, would I rather be an Atlanta Braves fan or a Pittsburgh Pirates fan or something like that,
right.
I'd probably say the Braves because I feel like I have more hope, even though it gets crushed every year.
Yeah, I just saw this conversation today. People were talking about, do you want to be a Philadelphia sports fan or an Atlanta sports fan? And I'm not going to see him be like, oh, we have the worst time ever. When, I mean, sometimes I think we have a podcast call where we're having the worst time ever. But yeah, no,
that's the alternate title of this podcast, really.
In Atlanta, it's just like, I don't know, man. Yeah, you're putting so much, and I know this is kind of an insane thing to say, but you're putting so much of the definition of the season on the last game the team plays. And like, yeah, you wanted them to win the playoffs. And yeah, it's ridiculous. They should have gotten to the World Series by now. But, that's still like a bunch, like a ton of really good Braves teams that played all summer long that you got to go see. And they still have so many that they're still young enough that they, like, Freddie Freeman's still here.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they I don't know.
All their pitchers are rookies. Like,
right.
Their whole pitching staff is rookies.
I have a hard time. I guess I just have a hard time believing it's that entirely. Yeah, it's painful the day they lose and maybe a couple days after, but, like, that's almost the entirety of the summer you got to have a good time. Whereas, yeah, you're talking about, like, a team like the Pirates or something, then, yeah, you're just kind of rotten on the inside at that point. You're like, I don't know, everything just dried up and died inside me. So,
that's right. A couple other notes to throw at you. The Dodgers are the first team to reach the World Series three times in a four-year span since the Yankees from 2000 to 2003. They're the first National League team to do it since the 1963-66 Dodgers. The Dodgers have been a frequent participant in the playoffs in recent years, but are still seeking their first title since 1988. Entering this postseason, they've gone 13 straight playoff appearances without a World Series title, which is tied for the third longest streak in big league history. And the Rays and Dodgers combined regular season winning percentage of .692 is the highest in a World Series ever. Now, of course, this was a 60-game season, so you're more likely to get a higher combined winning percentage. The previous mark belonged to the 1906 Cubs and White Sox at .690. The Cubs went 116-36 in the regular season that year, but lost the series. So I think it's pretty clear the Rays and Dodgers, even in this shortened season, had the two best seasons. And so I think it's apropos that they're playing each other in the Fall Classic. And now the narrative that we're seeing here, guys, is the penny-pinching Rays versus the big-spending Dodgers. And I know that we've talked about spending big and the Rays going out of their way to spend as little as possible and field a team on a shoestring and trying to win with style points as opposed to, and there's a lot of people out there who hate the way the Dodgers do business because of they just throw money at stuff. What are your thoughts on this narrative? Penny pinchers versus big spenders. And are there any concerns that you have that a Tampa win might be bad for baseball?
No. I mean, a Tampa win does almost nothing because every team is already doing what they're doing.
Like, not to the degree they're doing it, though. Not to the degree with the low payroll and purposefully punting spots in the rotation to do
bullpen
games. Well,
yeah, but they do that because they're already a small market team. The Yankees can't.
Yeah.
The Yankees can't do it to that level because only the Rays can do it that level. But everyone is doing what the Rays have been doing. Every single front office in baseball is modeled after, in some way or another, the Rays and what they're doing. You know, whether it came before the Rays and no one noticed it, like the A's, and it was sort of sold to everybody as Moneyball, you know, because they were putting together a team on a shoestring because their owner would not spend money. And so it's not like this is new. I don't think, the Astros tanked. The Astros tanked and they spend as little money as possible too. You know, so I don't think it does anything bad for baseball just because the attitude's already here. The Rays have already won the World Series of ideas.
So, Justin, what do you think about this narrative then of rich team versus poor team or big spending team versus penny pinchers? Because I've seen it in some places. I think I've seen it in some places, if I'm remembering correctly, that this could be a sign of more teams going as cheap as the Rays, especially in the smaller and mid markets. And I don't necessarily buy it, but there are worries about that because people don't like big spenders.
Sweet. Yeah. Looking forward to that. More teams finding excuses not to buy players. That's going to be a lot. It's going to make baseball a lot more fun.
Right.
I do think as far as this narrative goes, it is just that, just a narrative. I don't feel like it's what's going to get played up a lot. And to be honest with you, it's kind of refreshing. This is a debate that reminds me of comparatively a more wholesome time in baseball, and or certainly a more sane one, where this is the kind of conversation we're having. We were mad at the Yankees because they just bought players instead of cultivating talent through their farm system, something that's very easy to do, clearly. And now it's kind of, we're all just advocating like hell for them to pay the players fairly. So if anything, the Yankees are the good guys in that story now. Right. And we're kind of, yeah, and now we're looking at this in this World Series. I mean, the media just needs a narrative, and this seems like the most obvious one. But yeah, I think bad for baseball. Yeah, I mean, sure, I will say yes. I think that becoming even more prominent than it is now is it's bad for me in baseball. I've seen it as a trickle down effect. Watching the Phillies, announce that they're going to, they seem like their problems kind of started around the time that they said they were going to try to stay under the luxury tax, and now they're for a lot of reasons trying to cut payroll even more, which is, as a fan, it bums you out. It's not just like losing a player, It's not just like, oh, JT Realmuto is gone, the team will be back, whatever. It's sort of like setting your course. Like, if that's the plan moving forward, at least for a while, then it's going to determine, where this team goes for the next couple seasons, potentially. How they build this team, and we're already two seasons into Bryce Harper's prime. Nothing to show for it as far as playoffs go. So, it doesn't incite confidence in the team, like especially this team, because we know how bad this team has been when it's tried to get cute, when it's tried to build things manually, when it's tried to develop talent. The Phillies have not had great luck, and they have not made great choices. So I would not be excited to see more teams doing this, because the problem is they all look at the Rays and they think that could be us. But clearly the Rays have another part of the formula that everybody else just doesn't have yet, because they are doing it so much better than everyone else. So a lot of people trying to do that, you're going to wind up with a lot of teams like the Phillies that are just telling you, like, no, hang on. You just don't understand what we're doing. But I swear to God, we're doing something that really makes sense. And then it doesn't work. And they're like, okay, just forget about that. We're going to do something. Forget about Carlos Santana. We're going to sign Bryce Harper. Let's just move on. So until more people know how to do this well, I think it's better off being a Rays thing, but I think we all know it's not. It's pretty much going to be the driving philosophy behind roster building in Major League Baseball for a while.
It already is.
Yeah.
It's already here. Teams are already going cheaper. The Rays are as cheap as they are because they're a small market team and no one goes to their games. I think their owner is the least rich of a number of the owners, I think, last I checked. But, that doesn't make any of this better, but it does put some of it into context that, as opposed to the Yankees or John Middleton, the Rays are different. The Rays are very small market, and so they were already going to have a smaller payroll to begin with. And so I don't think it's realistic to think that every team is going to do it to that level. Because the Phillies aren't going to have a payroll, under $100 million? Or it's like just over it? It's something ridiculous. The Phillies aren't going to do that because they don't have to.
No, they don't have to. And Philadelphia won't accept it. They just won't accept it. There's no way Philadelphia Phillies fans will accept a team doing what the Rays do when they don't have to do it. The Rays really are kind of hamstrung and really do have to do it, because you're right. They play in an awful stadium. No one comes to the games. It really is incredible that they won 90 games 2 years ago, 96 games last year, and had the best record in the American League this year, and have gone on to the World Series. It's pretty incredible. They've gone back to the World Series for the first time since 2008. When the Philadelphia Phillies beat them. It is an interesting thing here that what the Rays are doing, and I think you hit on it, Justin. The Phillies have to get a whole lot damn smarter if they want to try and win around the margins, and they haven't been smart. They haven't made smart choices. They've been unlucky, but part of covering up for some bad luck is making a lot of good process decisions, and maybe the Phillies have made more good process decisions than we think, but when none of them work out, it's hard to say that you have. And so
I think the Phillies have probably done more right than we realize, and the Phillies have probably done a little more wrong than they've realized. But at the end of the day, the result is that they have spent a lot of money and they don't have any trophies to show for it.
Really nothing to show for it.
No banners.
And this has been more than a 1 year fluke. This has been an era defining. People have come and gone in the time that this has been going on. So clearly it is fair to say this team has a problem that's more than just bad luck when it comes to player development.
All right, well, let's get into some of the, just real quick to finish up here, talking about the series itself, who are you guys rooting for here? Who are you taking? I mean, with some of these things, sometimes I actually have to sit down and start watching it before I know who I'm rooting for. Like, I find myself, wow, I'm rooting for the Dodgers here. Why am I rooting for the Dodgers? It's like an emotional thing as I'm watching it, because part of me wants to root for the Dodgers so they can finally get over the hump. I mean, they lost a World Series in 2017 against the Astros, where the Astros were cheating like mad, and they've been the best team in the National League year after year after year after year, and they've failed to break through. There's something cool about watching a team finally break through like that. Or it's rooting for the underdog. And I think the Rays, I know people are going to talk about the Rays not being an underdog because they've won so many games the last few years. The Rays are the underdog here. They've never won a World Series. They've only been to one other World Series. If the Rays beat the Dodgers, I think it's a big upset. So I'm not sure who I'm going to root for just yet. I'm leaning towards the Rays, I think. But, you know, I haven't decided yet. Do you guys, Liz, do you feel one way or the other who you're leaning towards here?
Dodgers. They're a better team. Dodgers? Yeah, I mean, I said this about the Yankees. They've used all of the tools at their disposal to build a good team. Money, underhanded dealings, manipulating service time. They've drafted incredibly well. They've made great trades. They've signed well on the international market. They had a scandal that was based on sexual assault and, you know, an Excel spreadsheet of crimes. Like, they've done it all. They've done everything. There's nothing you could say they haven't done, really. So I admire that in a baseball team when they say, we want to win a title. Let's use literally every single thing that we possibly can to do that.
So a Machiavellian choice for the Dodgers here in the World Series for Liz. Justin, how about you?
I'm also rooting for the Dodgers. I like G-Man Choi. So, you know, I wish I didn't have to root against him. But I think, and honestly, a lot of the Rays players I like to watch play. Randy Arozarena.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, you know, they are a fun team, but I'm rooting for the Dodgers because I feel like I've felt the same way about them for a little longer. I don't care as much about the historical context or even that, like, it's what's fair. It's what's fair because they got cheated on when their World Series loss. I think it's more just that I want to see Clayton Kershaw get a World Series ring. I like Cody Bellinger. I'm in awe of how deep this team is. And, I guess I feel like it's their turn. And B, it kind of worries me when a team that's never won a World Series wins one, because it's a list of about five or six teams. And it's the kind of thing that when there's no more teams on that list, I mean, barring like an expansion team of some kind, I don't know. That just seems like that's such a weird permanent stat to go away. So to see
the end
another
of baseball,
team,
it feels, you know.
Yeah, like maybe we call it at the end of that. Oh. So see another team etched off that stone is just kind of like, huh? Well, I mean,
we're gonna need some more teams.
I'm not too worried about the Mariners, but like, you know, it's still it seems so permanent. So yeah, I've enjoyed watching the Dodgers play. I was honestly, my biggest disappointment of the postseason was how brief that Dodgers Padres series was. I built that up in my head a lot, and it was just over in a second. So I've enjoyed seeing these Dodgers play. I like this matchup. I think it'll be a good World Series. But yeah, I'm rooting for the Dodgers.
All right, I think at the moment I'm rooting for the Rays, but check in on me once game one starts, and I'll probably have a change of heart. I'm not sure just yet. I need to be in the moment in order to fit, because I don't really care who wins this World Series, but there is always a team you end up rooting for, and so
I will say there is not neither of these teams directly anger me. Which is nice. I don't look at them and think of the first thing about them that pisses me off.
I'd be happy either way. I honestly would be happy either way if either of these teams won.
That the Astros aren't in it is already a victory.
And the Braves, man. I mean, the Astros are more hateable than the Braves, but the Braves are pretty close. World Series MVP. Who's your pick? World Series MVP, Justin.
I'm gonna say G-Man Choi.
Okay.
You think the Rays are going to win the World Series?
We're going to get to that in a second. We're going to get to that in a second. But
I want that to be true. So if that has, if the Rays have to win, if that has to be true for the Joy to be the MVP, then I'm okay with that.
Unless that dude hits six bombs in a losing effort, I don't think he wins that. He wins the hardware if they don't win MVP.
He's the kind of player that should win championship MVPs like this, because you know it's just that guy who gets hot for 15 games or whatever, and it just comes through when he has to, and it's always more fun seeing him take home the hardware. I like him, so I want to see him excel.
Liz, who's your World Series MVP prediction?
I'm gonna say Cody Bellinger.
Oh, that was the guy I was gonna pick. Good pick.
I could switch it to Clayton Kershaw or Mookie Betts or Justin Turner. They have a lot of guys.
A lot of MVPs.
They have a lot of guys. They have a lot of guys who could turn on a dime and have an insane series. You know, at the bat and in the field. Yeah. Any of them could at any time. Like there were, you could feel it trying to start to happen in the last series. And at the end, they almost got there. So I think the Rays, I would like for the Rays to have to watch out. I'm going to eat my words, I'm sure. But
so you're predicting a six-way tie for World Series MVP.
I'm not predicting a six-way tie. I'm saying no, they've got so many dudes who could win it, you know?
Yeah.
I will say if the Rays win, I'd want the MVP to be Choi. If the if the Dodgers win, I'd want the MVP to be Mookie Betts. I love Mookie Betts.
Yeah, I'll go with Mookie Betts. I think he's the leader in the clubhouse and in the Las Vegas odds makers. My underdog MVP selection, and I think he'll pitch enough in this series to do it, is Julio Urias, who was had a phenomenal NLCS and pitched the last three innings of Game 7 in relief, pitching shutout baseball after he'd thrown 100 some odd pitches. I think it was in Game 3. So he's a good looking young pitcher, and I think he's a guy that they could get work as a starter and a reliever for. Those are those kinds of guys. It's like a Madison Bumgarner type situation. Those guys tend to have a big series in the Fall Classic. So, Liz, I imagine if you're talking about Dodgers players for World Series MVP, you're picking the Dodgers to win this thing?
I am. I want it. I hope it happens. I would like to wish it into being.
Dodgers in how many games?
Six or seven. I want the series to go seven games. Everyone should.
Yeah, we all want the series to go seven games. Justin, are you going with the Rays or the Dodgers?
I'm
going to
say Dodgers in seven. Yeah, I my instinct says probably less than seven, but I'm really hoping this series is as fun as it as I'm hoping it can be. So I'm gonna say seven.
I'll say Dodgers in six. I'm also obviously hoping it goes seven, but I think Dodgers probably win this thing in six. Although the Rays are a plucky team, they don't have any superstars on that team, although Randy Arozarena, the way he's playing, is playing like a superstar, but they don't exactly have a ton of superstars on that team. Just don't let Charlie Morton play in a deciding game, guys. Don't let Charlie Morton pitch. If you're the Dodgers and you're facing Charlie Morton in a game seven, you're going to lose. That's just how it's going to happen. So y'all gotta make sure you get that thing done in six games and hope that Morton's not lined up for the clincher. All right, as we finish things up here on episode 425 of Hittin' Season, Justin, any final thoughts?
In preparation for our Jay Johnstone episode of The Dirty Inning, I'm reading one of his books, and he told a story about an umpire who they were trying to mess with. So they wrote, when he was playing with the Dodgers, they wrote, like, "Hey, Frank," the umpire's name was Frank, "may God bless you, Tom," and put it in the bag of balls the umpire was going to have during the game. But the guy never saw it and then threw it to the pitcher to be used as a game ball. And the pitcher threw it. It was fouled off and landed with a guy in the stands whose name was also Frank.
Oh, my God.
So when he looked at it, he was like, "What the hell?"
That's fantastic.
Yeah, this book is incredible in that way, and that was one of the ones that stuck out to me, so I just wanted to share that.
Good story. I like that. Well, we'll make sure we're listening to The Dirty Inning this week for the Jay Johnstone episode. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
The MLB Players Association announced today that they are giving out, they'll be giving out an award every year in Curt Flood's name, the Player's Choice Award, which will be given to a former player, living or deceased, who, in the image of Flood, demonstrated a selfless, longtime devotion to the Players Association and advancement of players' rights. It's being given out in, I think, Friday. And I think that's great. It's long past time that something is named after Curt Flood.
Yeah, no kidding. Curt Flood was a trailblazer, no doubt about it.
There is now an award in the name of the man who did not want to be in Philadelphia so much that he changed baseball forever. Some fans might be ashamed of that. I think looking at how far we've come, we should wear that as a badge of honor.
I think, honestly, people don't talk enough about how the Phillies clearly are responsible for some of this change.
Because of their racism.
They made themselves so unappealing to a baseball player of great skill that he went to the Supreme Court and changed the sport forever rather than come and play here.
I mean, and essentially threw his career away, the rest of it.
Yeah. Worth it.
No, totally. He managed to stay out of the Philadelphia, so.
God bless him.
The rest of us are trapped here.
That's right. That's right. Well, on this date in Phillies history, back in 1980 was Game 5 of the World Series. We talked about this, I think it was during the offseason, that when ESPN did a ranking of the greatest World Series ever, the 1980 World Series was considered one of the classics, and it truly was. And they talked about this Game 5, that this was maybe the most, I think it was consequential World Series game ever played, it was basically what happened was the Royals had a one run lead going into the ninth inning, and Manny Trio beat out an infield hit. Del Unser drove in Mike Schmidt with a double in the ninth. Manny Trio beat out an infield hit. The Phillies scored two runs in the ninth off Dan Quisenberry to win Game 5 and totally flipped the series in their favor, and they went on to win Game 6. But on this date in Phillies history, as we were recording this on October 20th, the Phillies won that Game 5 of the 1980 World Series. And then, of course, the moment we all remember, Jimmy Rollins in the gap in Game 4 of the NLCS, with giving the Phillies a 5-4 win off of Jonathan Broxton. That poor son of a gun, man.
Brox.
I mean,
love you forever, buddy.
Jonathan Broxton, which he really should move to Philadelphia. He'd never have to pay for a drink or a meal.
Never.
In his entire life.
He'd just have to live with everyone being like, hey, the guy who sucked twice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, hey, you get free beers and food wherever you can get it. However you can get it, right? I mean, especially if you're, Jonathan Broxton was a big guy.
You're afraid he's eating himself out of house and home.
Well, I'm just saying he doesn't turn down that kind of thing. So I'm not sure why he's not in Philadelphia, 24/7. Anyway, maybe that's just dumping on poor Jonathan Broxton's head. I'm sorry.
It is. That's we're doing that. That's
exactly what's
what
happening.
Doing.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening to episode 425 of Hittin' Season. And thanks to Justin and Liz once again for being podcast pals on the Monday night edition as we were doing it here. We wanted to make sure we were able to talk about Game 7. Folks, don't forget to check out The Dirty Inning and all the rest of the great shows we have on the Good Fight podcast feed. Continued success. And, of course, our daily news and notes show up and in. No longer than 10 minutes, we get you the latest Phils and MLB news to get you out the door and on your way. And don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon as well for all the good stuff we have up there. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.